dance if you want to. We've always been on the brink.
That's what Rollo did when he scored.
Once.
Looked an absolute book.
Yeah.
Well, hello and welcome back to part two of the Albion Roar Live on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM and here at Brighton's Rialto Theatre. Everyone has now recharged their glasses, including ourselves, which is good news. And please welcome back Chris Catlin and Andy Rollins.
Thank you.
I love the way you pointed to Andy when you said Chris. Again.
Again.
Andy was pickled when? Blah, 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 blah. So, what have we got in the second half then, Andy?
Well, this is called Division One. Here we come. And Chris, following promotion, did you think that you had it in you to be a top five player again?
After promotion, no, I didn't, no. I thought I'd had these wonderful years at Huddersfield Town and 10 years with Coventry City and three with Brighton, the promotion years. And I went and seen Mike Bamber and I said, to be quite honest, Mike, I says, I had an Achilles tendon injury and I don't think I'm good enough for the top division. I don't want to let anybody down. So I think it's about time you replace me with somebody else. I was quite blunt and honest. And it's, you know, it was very sad because I love professional football. I love everything to do with football. But I knew it was time for me. And I think they appreciate that. And within a couple of weeks, they signed John Gregory, a magnificent footballer, to play right back for us. And then I went down and played the odd game in the reserves. And that was coming. I was on the downhill. The 3 years I had as a player here, I think I contributed a little bit, particularly in the dressing room.
I think more than just
agree.
A little bit.
No. And but the time was right for me to step aside.
Okay. And Rollett, you only actually played seven games that season and scoring once.
Thank you.
Against Coventry.
You can, yep.
But tell us about your last appearance at the Goldstone.
At the Goldstone, okay, yeah. Well, if anyone wants to watch it, it's on YouTube, guys. But basically, it was Norwich City at home.
Norwich.
Yeah, my old club as well, so obviously that was maybe
symmetry.
It was a game that was meant to be, do you know what I mean? And they obviously had some decent players in the team. Playing up front, we all know they had Justin Fashanu, and we can all remember Justin, you know, for what he was. Great centre forward, you know, very physical. Guys, can you remember what happened?
You're stalling, mate, come on.
Yeah. Well, basically, as you say, Big Fash was up front. I knew it was going to be a battle, as it always was back in the day, you know, with a centre-half, centre-forward. And, Fash was giving as much stick-out as he could. You know, arms were going everywhere. I think I broke my nose in the first couple of minutes. I was trying to get a little bit of retribution.
That's a big word.
Yeah, what does that mean? Thanks, Kat. Yeah.
Retribution.
You like that one. And basically, sometime in the second half, I just remember that I'd somehow stayed back and the ball was in their box. It was a long clearance. I'm tracking it down, watching it as I'm running back. But at the corner of my eye, I can see Fash making a beeline towards me. And the next thing you know, he's just absolutely clobbered me. You know, caught me across the face. Elbows, a bit of hand, a bit of everything else. And probably ended up breaking the nose again where it was broken already. But and of course, unfortunately, you know, I mean, you know, I'm trying to waffle on, but we had a little bit.
You're
about...
You're human, aren't you?
I am human. I'm just trying to put this into context. You know, we all know how easy it is to see the red mist, guys. And Lewis Dunk had a little bit of this a couple of seasons ago, where he obviously kept getting sent off. All I can remember is getting hit in the face, fell to the floor, got up. The first thing I saw was Justin, and I just swung the best right hook that I could possibly swing. Caught him on the side of the head. He just literally went down, and then it all just kicked off, you know. And I just didn't know at the time that obviously when I watched it back after, that the guy who was commentating on the game was saying, like, when it was yeah, it was dying down a little bit. The referees came over trying to obviously get everything sorted, and he just said, he give Fashanu the yellow card, which I thought was ridiculous. He should have sent him off. But then the commentator was saying, I wonder what Rollings will get. Will it be a yellow or will it be a red? Seriously. And I'm thinking, now, imagine if I did that now, I'd be banned forever, wouldn't I? You know what I mean? So he pulled out the red card. That was it. I had to go off. But my one undying memory is the fact, as I was walking off at the Goldstone, everybody stood up and gave me a standing ovation. And ironically, as you say, Norwich was the club I played for. That was my last game ever at the Goldstone. So probably a fitting yeah. way to go, if you can call it that. You
did
know
you
mean?
Know that Fash was actually an amateur boxer, a champion amateur
I
boxer?
I didn't find out till after, Alan. No, I must admit. So maybe I'd have thought twice about swinging that right hand if I'd have known.
You floored him handsomely.
You're right.
I mean, it is on YouTube. For those that want to see it's there on YouTube.
Yeah. But you know, one of those things, as you say, that happens in your life. Have I got any regrets? No, not really. No.
Do you remember what the club doctor? Or actually, can you remember the club doctor's name?
Well, Hertz was less. Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Do you remember what he said?
I just remember he said something about making sort of contact with my face, my nose, my thing. Was he wearing a ring or something, Fashanu?
He said that he complained to the ref, or Mr. Daniels, had he seen the large signet ring that Fashanu had been wearing. And he said, the piece that Fashanu was wearing was akin to a knuckle duster.
There we go. That's why he made a mess of my nose, guys.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a bit like Harry Redknapp. I've got no sense of smell whatsoever, guys. So if ever I'm in the jungle, stick me with a dunny. I'll be all right.
Now, of course, that wasn't Fashanu's last piece of history with the album, because, of course, Chris, you signed Justin Fashanu.
I did, yeah.
And you put... And now you heard that he was a bit of a troublemaker, so you decided to put him up for 4 days.
I'd heard a lot about Fashanu. I'd done a lot of homework on him. I'd asked Peter Ward, who used to play at this football club, and I'm godfather to his daughter, what is this Fashanu? He intrigued me. Cluffy paid over £1 million for him. Jimmy Cyril, Shrewdnut, paid over £100,000 for him. And he played, the season before, he played 34 games for Notts County. He got a bad knee, he got this, he was this. I didn't know whether he was animal, vegetable, mineral off the description that was coming back. But what I did know, I needed a centre-forward who can put himself about. And I got Terry Connor and I got Dean Saunders on a free transfer, and them three would have scored enough goals if Fashanu remained fit. I was still sceptical about Fashanu, though, so I got him down to stay with me and my missus for 4 days and interrogation about him and see if he had motivation and to see if he wanted to get this football club back in the Premiership of the First Division. Had he got this in him? Had he got the hunger? And he's a very intelligent boy, and he convinced me he had got the hunger to do it. So he had a medical at the club. He passed his medical. On he went, and it was quite apparent to me after 10 games that he had a septic knee. There's something wrong with him. And it was very, very difficult for me because I had no money to spend. They gave me £100,000. And I went out and signed Stephen Penny for £10,000, Danny Wilson for £45,000. Chris Hutchins for £50,000 and Dean Saunders on a free.
And that's not structure, it's for a train ticket, wasn't it?
Yeah, £18 Saunders, yeah. I'll come back. Now, I'll digress a minute with Dean Saunders because he came down here and I'd seen him play for Swansea Reserves. I couldn't believe what I was watching. So I phoned John Bond up the next morning and asked him how much he wanted for him. And he said, £15,000. I wouldn't take a penny less than £15,000. I hadn't got £15,000. The club wouldn't give me £15,000 to spend. But by an absolute fluke, at the end of the season, he got a free transfer. And only two clubs come in for him. Trevor Cherry at Bradford, my old mate at Huddersfield, and me. So I went straight, got him down here. So I took him up and down the seafront, got him a stick of rock, took him back to the room... to my office, and I said, there's the papers to sign. He says, how much is my signing on fee? And I said to him, what have you done? And there was silence. He says, what do you mean, what have I done? I says, you just come to this football club. I said, if you sign for Brighton of Albion I see you being the Wales team at the end of the season, and you will get 15 to 20 goals for Brighton of Albion, and you'll be on your way to being great success as a professional footballer. And he says, so there's no signing on for you then? I says, you've got it in one. I says, how much did he train for from Swansea? And he said, £18. I says, go and see Ken Calver in the office at the Petty Cash, and he'll give you £18 for the train fare. And that's how we signed Dean Saunders. Lovely story. What a great player he was. Unbelievable.
Okay, we do need to rewind a little bit, though. Now, Mike Bamber brought you into the club in the summer of 1983. You, Jimmy Mealy was still the manager.
Yes.
Now, you and Jimmy didn't necessarily see eye to eye?
Well, not necessarily. There's a big thing made of this. Jimmy had his way. The football club in them times was... Mr. Wickendene had gone down in the aeroplane, and the club... I'll give you an example. I had a meeting on a Monday morning with Ken Calvert, the secretary, Mike Bamber, and somebody from Barclays Bank. And they said the club needed money in. And a week later, Mr. Bamber said he sold Steve Foster to Portsmouth for 90 grand. And that was when I was going to walk out. I said, no. I said, no. You do not sell anybody under me. I'm the manager. You're the chairman. So I went in my office, and after a couple of weeks, I managed to get Barton, the manager of Villa, to pay me 150 grand for Steve. Steve didn't want to go. Steve Foster was a good captain, a good player. Everybody loved him in Brighton. And it was difficult to not kick him out of the club, but ask him to leave the club. And I couldn't tell the supporters what was going on, but I had to get rid of him. So I took him personally to Villa. And I never knew Steve too well until we went up there on the car journey. Got over breakfast next morning, come up. He says, I don't want to go over breakfast, over the sausage rolls. And I said, you've got to go. We need the money. You've got to go. Anyhow, Doug Ellis turned up, Barton turned up, the television cameras turned up, everybody turned up. And I got convinced Steve to sign. And he signed, which saved the club's financial predicament at the time. And I said, can I have the cheque now then? And Ellis says, what do you mean? He says, football doesn't work like that. I says, how does it work then? He says, well, our secretary sends it down there. I says, I'm here now. I said, no need to send it over there to come back. I says, give me the cheque now and I'll take it back to Mr. Bamber. So he says, yeah, this is the way Aston Villa do business, he says. And he gave me a cheque for 150 grand for Steve. And I brought it back with me. And unfortunately, Steve didn't play for 6 weeks for Villa. He had a thigh injury and he wasn't too happy with that. But that's when it started. There was Steve Foster, Gordon Smith, Jimmy Case, Joe Corrigan. There was loads of them. And the situation at the club wasn't great. It wasn't great. But we didn't want to let you lot know about it, or I didn't, because you used to seeing these wonderful players. And there was good players, there's no question, talented players. So my job was to try and get them out, to try and get the wage bill down and get other players in, not on as much money, but still make the performance on the field attractive, if you like. Mm. So I, like yourself, just described, I got 100 grand. Justin wanted a success, so what I knew, I'd blown me 100 grand. So then I got on the phone again, and I managed to sell two wingers, Stephen Penny and Neil Smiley. And I got Graham Taylor biting on Neil Smiley. And I sold him to Watford for 100 grand. So I got my 100 grand out for Fashanu, the failure. And I don't mean that disrespectful to Justin, by the way, you know. Neil Smiley was a good player for Brighton, very quick, very, you know, the crowd loved him, this, that and the other. But in 18 months, he got a free transfer from Watford. So in retrospect, it wasn't, you know, the wrong thing to do. And then went on to there. Then I saw this, I heard about this mad bloke in Holland called Hans de Kraaij. Absolute and a banger. But I liked him. I thought he's got potential. He knocked a referee out in Holland and got a 12-game ban. You can always tell where there's potential, can't you? Smacked a referee under the chops. Nothing like fashion new style. And so I got him over, had a chat with him, and got him to sign. And he was great. And I thought, he's a bit like Nobby Styles, really. He run around the pitch, couldn't play. But he was tackling, enthusiasm. I love that. Going this, that and the other. And then I said, what I want you to do on the Saturday, Hans, is jump up and down in front of the goalkeeper. Does anybody remember that?
Yes.
He jumped 6 foot like a bloody circus clown. I said, no, just jump and put him off. I got him in my room on the Monday morning. I says, no, I says, all the North Stand was going up and down. He's putting everybody, it was wild. He says, boss, while you're here, he says, can I have Tuesday off? I says, what do you want Tuesday off for? He says, I'm getting married. And I said, I come around my desk and I said, oh, fantastic. Oh, great. Yeah, of course you can have Tuesday off, like. I says, when's she coming over? He says, no, she's already here. I said, what do you mean she's already? You've only been here a fortnight. He says, she's a Brighton girl. I says, what do you mean she's a Brighton girl? He's been here a fortnight and me head. I'm not actually a brain surgeon, but Jesus, I put two and four together here. I said, how long have you known her? He says, I met her in the Pink Coconut on Friday. This is a trick. No. And I says, Hans, it doesn't work like this. I says, what are you drinking? I says, the Pink Coconut on Friday. I says, no, you can't do it. He says, yeah, I can. He says, Frank said it's all right. I says, Frank who? He says, Frank Worthington. I says, well, he's a good judge of birds, isn't he? Anyway, I gave him permission to get married on the Tuesday. He got married, and he's with this Brighton girl for 10 years. Amazingly. And now Hans has gone on to be the Gary Lineker of Dutch television. And everything. He's very, very successful in television in Holland. And he represented our football club magnificently, both on and off the field. He was an absolute gentleman of the utmost respect for Hans Kreis. He kept his own counsel. He didn't give a monkey's what all some of these sour senior players were saying. He just got on with doing his job, and he was very proud to be a professional footballer. He represented Holland very well.
Mm. Is he still married, Kat?
You know, he's got another one now. Okay, he went for a three for two in Breeder. This. Okay.
Now, you mentioned a couple of players there. We're going to come to those in a sec, but I mean, there was one of the players that went was, of course, Gordon Smith.
Yes.
Now, tell us about the circumstances in which he went and what was actually on that tape.
What tape?
What?
Basically,
when a manager's getting rid of senior players, it's the manager's fault. He says, like Jimmy Case, obviously a fantastic player, great player. But Jimmy says, Cat says, that's me. His legs have gone. He's going around saying, yeah. Jimmy had problems, in my opinion, off the field, not on the field, off the field, which represented me. I wanted to try and build a football club of youth, vigour, and coming back to where we was. And we got all these... And it was difficult. And I had a vision I wanted to do. Gordon Smith is one of the loveliest men I've ever met in football.
He is.
He's highly intelligent, brilliant. But once again, it was a war of attrition. I had to go to Carlisle's and all these football clubs in the division down there, and it was like war. And Gordon was a great manipulator of the ball, and I wasn't too sure whether he could do it at that level. Obviously, he got the ability to do it. Whether he had the fight and the sinew in him to fight in these games, which we needed, I wasn't sure. But so I sold him to Manchester City, and off he went. Once again, they'll say, you know, I wasn't there to be popular. I was there on a mission, me, to make this club get this debt thing down and try to get some sort of enthusiasm and a youth in that team. Yeah. And that was my game plan. As it turned out, it didn't work out, because eventually, at the end of the day, when you're messing around with free transfers, bits of this, bits of that, you'll come unstuck after 40 games.
Let's move on from that. Okay, so one of the other players you signed was, of course, one of your former teammates. One of the most flamboyant players, certainly in the UK.
Hang on,
are
you talking Dennis or Frank?
This is Frank Worthington.
All right.
So talk us about the signing of Frank and how that went down.
Well, I was trying to sell some season tickets because the players we got, they weren't household names anymore because I got rid of them all. And I'd known Frank when I was a boy. It's amazing, like, he used to sleep on our couch at home. My dad used to give him a mighty stick, called him a big furry and all sorts, like. But he was the one of all of us.
Sorry, just to translate into Southern, that was fairy, not furry.
No. No, he was jumping out the way, and we used to play five-a-size on a cinder track at Huddersfield, and he was the one who wouldn't dive in. But what a player. What a player, and what a character. Women destroyed him. Every other 2 minutes, this Swedish bird, he was going back with the fern. They had an argument, maybe about the Christmas tree. He goes back on the boat with the furniture, then they make up, the furniture would come back. And he'd go again, and she'd come back again. He's a nightmare with the ladies. I don't know what it is. He became a nightmare, and it destroyed him. But as a footballer and as a guy, top draw. I've been very fortunate in my short managerial career to meet so many interesting characters. You know, they've been brilliant. You know, I mentioned Hans Crave, Frank Worthington, and Brian Clough. That's another one. I haven't told you the Cloughy
one, Wilson,
have I?
Yeah.
Danny Wilson, I'd seen him playing at Chesterfield, and Cloughy signed him for £250,000. And then he played him on the right wing, and I thought, he's never a right winger. He couldn't go past my missus, never mind anything else. Well, not many can.
No
actually.
One can.
No, that's right. So I went, I phoned him up and his secretary, and asked him if we'd get him on loan. And we got him and Danny down on loan. And I found him just exactly what I wanted at the time where we'd lost some key players. And he came and he set off well. Then Ron Greenwood gave him Barley Water Player of the Month award. And I thought, what is he doing? I'm telling Cloughy he's crap. And he's telling him he's Barley Water Player of the Month. Like. Anyway, this went on. And Wilson's going from strength to strength. And he scored about 15 goals for us. So I thought, bloody hell. And so I phoned him up. I says, listen, how much do you want for him? He says, I've paid £250,000. I want £250,000 for him. I said, I've got £30,000. He says, it was like £30,000. No, no. He says, come up and see me. And so I went up and seen Brian, drove up there, knocked on his door. Are you in, Brian? Yes, I'm in. Come in. How's your journey? I says, fine, yes. Not too bad, thank you. Do you want a drink? Yes, I'll have a coffee with you. He says, no, a drink. And I says, what do you mean, drink? He says, and he's not behind his desk. He's lying on the floor in his tracksuit bottoms. And I says, yeah, go on, what are you having? He says, a whiskey. I go on, I'll have a whiskey, will you? I said, I'd do anything to get Wilson. You know, so I had a whiskey on the floor. I'm in tracksuit bottoms. And then I couldn't get round to the subject of Wilson. All he wanted to talk about, first of all, he says, have you got Joe Corrin and Jimmy Case down there? I says, yeah, I have. And he just shook his head. That's the only thing he mentioned, football. Next minute, he's on about, his uncle's got a sweet factory in Middlesbrough. And I've got a rock shop on Brighton Seafront. The next hour, that's all we talked about, where he used to go on a Saturday afternoon over the wall to this sweet factory, nick sweets from his uncle's factory. And this, for an hour, I had this with Cloughy. I thought, here's the bloke who's won the European Cup, one of the most respected managers of all time. And he's on about this sweet factory in Middlesbrough. And I thought, geez, it's surreal. So I says, I've got to go back. I've got to take training because I had to do everything then. Anyway, I came back and I thought, sod this. He was playing well again. I phoned him up on a Sunday morning and I said, his lad answered the phone, not Nigel. He's got another boy. I says, your dad in? He says, he is. He says, who is it? I said, Chris Catlin in Brighton. Can you ask him if I have a quick word with him? And he eventually Cluffy come to the phone and he says, who is it? I says, it's Chris Catlin in Brighton, Brian. And it was silence. He says, do you know what day it is? I say, yeah, it's Sunday. I say, it's Sunday in Brighton as well. And then silence again. He says, what do you want? He said, I said, I want to try and sign Danny Wilson off you. Because I know you're going to campus. He says, £40,000 on my manager's desk in the morning, else F off and never speak to me again. And he'd been so pleasant over the humbugs and purr drops, and he's telling me to F off. And I was shocked. Anyway, I went back to Mike Bamba. I said, we've got to get £40,000 from somewhere and get it on his desk for in the morning. I says, Wilson's worth £250,000 old. He's an outstanding player. And he was, eventually. He came here on a permanent signing. And he was terrific. Anyway, that's my experience with Brian Clough. You know, what a character, what a manager. And, superb. But we got Wilson, and it's a hell of a story.
Your
that,
best signing, you think?
Wilson. Dean Saunders was my best signing. But yeah. I've got to admit, a massive mistake which could take this club in a completely different direction.
Ian Wright?
Yeah. Hang on a minute here. I'm up at the university. It's playing in bog, nothing. We had to call training off, and this lad come with an hat on. He'd been at West Ham, Millwall, been all over London. Nobody wanted him. And he came up, and he come with another fella with a black hat and an elder lad. Up he went, played 10 minutes. We had to call the training off because we had no facilities. The water, I'm not making that as an excuse, waterlogged. So Stephen Penny was making his debut against Swindon Town Reserves. And I said to the George Petchy and George Aitken, I'm going to play this Ian Wright tonight. Have a good look at him because I've heard, you know, I've seen him that 10 minutes and, you know, I couldn't really tell because we had to call it off. Come back in the morning and he was all singing and dancing about Penny. And I said, what about this colour boy? And he says, no, and you know, I said, what's mean? And he said, well, he's been to Millwall, his family's trouble, and it was, oh, I thought, I need this after, or whatever, you know, all the senior players. I needed this like an O in the head. Anyhow, next minute, he knocks on the door, and in comes this guy, Ian Wright, and this guy, and he says, are you going to sign me? I says, Ian, I would like you to play, stay at this football club another week so I can have a look at you. I've never seen you play yet. He says, no, you either sign me or I'm going. I thought, well, that's positive. You know, I liked his attitude. I like that. But he says, I says, but I haven't seen you play. And he cut long story short, I went back to George Petch and George. I'm not shifting the blame here. But they said, no, it's problems and problems this, that and the other. I saw him 3 weeks later play for Crystal Palace Reserves. I tell you what, I could have died. I could have died. Can you imagine Dean Saunders and Ian Wright up front for Brighton? We would have absolutely pissed that league. Excuse my language. Pissed the league.
I think the ship has long since sailed.
Hang on. And then,
did you say ship?
About the same time, I got Ray Houghton here as well. 25 grand Ray Houghton was. And I got him down with his missus and his pram, and he wanted a signing on fee. And I walked up and down. Joe Messina in the Courtland's Hotel was brilliant. And I'm walking up and down with this Ray Houghton fella who Fulham would let him go for 25 grand. And I couldn't offer him a penny. Not a shilling. I felt embarrassed. Off he went back with his pram, back in his car and away. And then when I knew I felt being totally humiliated, undermined, we got a player called Jeff Clark from Sunderland. Gone past his sell-by date, but we had Eric Young and Gary O'Reilly, who was looking at cat's eyes in the road. You know, they're a bit, they needed, like Andy did, with Graham Cross and me and this, that, and a bit of knowledge around. And Sunderland wouldn't let him go on free. They wanted 6.5 grand for him, and they wouldn't give the 6.5 grand. And then I knew it was only a matter of time that I was out this football club. And, you know, you're totally undermined. Because in the dressing room, the group of players, they know. It's like any group, isn't it? You know if anybody's behind you, not behind you. And certainly that particular board at that time was wanting me to go. So eventually I did. Oh, what about the Southampton game?
Oh, the FA Cup?
That's a good one.
Have you been reading AD's notes?
No! Have you got
that chance? I was actually going to rewind to the Liverpool game in the FA Cup, actually. But
okay, carry on. Shut up.
Tell us about the Liverpool game in the FA Cup.
A Liverpool game in the FA Cup was a blinder. You know, we am I rapping on too much? Peterborough, are you enjoying this? Yeah. Are you all right, yeah?
Rollo, do you remember the Liverpool game in the FA Cup in 1984?
No, I don't.
Rollo, should we just go and join the crowd?
I think we should. Yeah. Listen to this, I'll do it as quick as possible. We drew at Peterborough on the snow, brought them back here. John Wiles' team beat them. We got a crap John, Newcastle away with Paul Gascoigne, Beardsley and all them. Dean Saunders killed them. He was brilliant that day, Saunders. And Wilson was as well. Beat them. We drew Southampton at Liverpool in the cup. And I think what you're asking is that before the game, they were particularly strong on the left-hand side, Alan Kennedy and Ray Kennedy. And I went up to this Brighton player, one of my star players, and I said, listen, I want you to tuck in today on this side because they're particularly strong down this side. And I saw the glazed look in his eyes. Absolutely glazed. Nothing was going in. And I said, no, they're particularly strong. They're good left foots. They're coming down this side. I said, I want you to tuck in and give some support. Still the glazed look. And I ended up saying, we're playing in blue today and we're going that way.
Wasn't that the case?
And that's all he could take in. We're playing in blue and we're going that way.
Wasn't that the game that one of our chaps kicked Graham Souness out of the game?
Yes, Tony Grealish, yeah.
The late, great Tony Grealish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you tell him to kick Souness?
Yeah, well, I said introduce yourself. No. And finally, I'll shut up now, but we play Southampton in the next game and quarterfinals of the FA Cup. And I give him, I thought Winston Churchill speech before I went out. I'm banging the table, telling him for the first 20 minutes we're going to go for them. No messing, we're going to go. Kicked them all up the arse as they went out. Off they went. We never got over the halfway line.
No.
It was absolute rubbish. We were 2-0 down after about 20 minutes. Moran scored twice.
Glenn Cockerell.
Then all of a sudden... Like Cockerell.
Was it Cockerell? Was it? Okay. Anyway, all of a sudden, I felt the ground go quiet and I felt the heat in my dugout here. Then all of a sudden, this voice comes from the back of the stand. Get back to your rock shop, Catelyn! Get back to your rock shop!
Was that Dick?
And I couldn't help but laugh. And 3 weeks later, I was.
Oh,
but playing in goal in that Liverpool game was Joe Corrigan. Now Joe Corrigan went on to later admit that he actually was playing drunk half the time for
what?
Us. Yeah. Did you know anything about that?
No, I didn't know anything about it at the time, but it doesn't 100% surprise me.
Okay. Hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Well, on that note, a great time for Shirt of the Week again. And we've got another one. And guess who's modelling it this time?
It's too small for me. It's shrunk.
No. So, you're not going to get your baps out, are you?
No, I'm not. So, in this bag here, I have this shirt. So, Al, you can describe this.
Please,
I'm going
to
let you do this one. So.
You're going to let me do it. What language is it in today? Birmingham. You bastard. It's... Okay, well, AD's going to show it. And then, Andy, do you want to describe this shirt? Seeing as Kat hasn't belted up for the last 20 minutes. What the fuck is that?
I'll tell you what, that is, yeah.
Christ!
I know I'm the last person to say this, but Andy, you fat bastard.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Oh, Kat, you're wearing a catwalk.
It's definitely European, isn't it? I can see, yeah. I got a little bit of...
That's good, I like that.
Little bit of,
that's not bad,
there's
is
a little
it?
Bit of Croatia
no,
in there
bad,
or something like that,
bad,
is it? I don't know, but...
Yes!
Yeah, not sure.
Yes!
Okay, so actually, could you actually, for those that don't actually have Super Reverb Vision, could you actually describe that for us, Andy?
Well, at the moment, yeah, it is literally like some lovely Czech sleeves as coming down. I don't know if there's anything in that. Is that anything to do with the team that obviously is... No.
Well, you mean Czech?
Is it a Czech team? That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, right now. Sorry.
No, it's a purple fronted shirt with Czech sleeves and Czech sides. It's got Balkan Petroleum Limited London.
All right.
And actually, it hasn't put a sticking plaster over the badge here, so I can see who it is.
Is it a giveaway?
It is a bit of a giveaway.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Can you read it?
I'll read it, no, because it's bloody Romanian.
Oh.
Your shirt of the show for this is the 2010-11 home shirt of Romanian side Politehnica Timișoara. They're nicknamed Banatelil, the Banat people, after the region of Romania. Also, Alb Violeti, the White Purples. In 2012, the club was dissolved due to financial problems. A new side was formed when another Romanian side, ACS Reșas, decided to relocate to Timișoara. The team was renamed ACS Poli Timișoara. This upset many fans. The core factions of the Ultras movement decided to support an alternate club in the lower league. Shades of FC United, by the sound of things.
Is it on the site?
I would hope so. Is it on the site, Phil? Yes, it is. Yep. The team currently plays in the Liga 2, the second level of Romanian football, having been relegated last season from the top league. They have two home grounds, that's
greedy,
which seem to alternate between the smaller 5,000 capacity Stadionul Electrica and the larger 32,972 all-seater Dan...
Yes!
Well, you have to bear in mind I haven't actually seen this yet. So
I've been practicing pronouncing that one as well.
Paltinisanu Stadium. There seems to be very few links to the UK, thankfully. Midfielder Felipe da Costa made a handful of appearances for both sides between 2007 and 2008. Costel Pantemilion is the current Forest goalie. He also played for Man City, Watford, Sunderland, and he began his career with Politehnica in 2003, making 113 appearances. Believe it or not, there really was a player called Catelyn Chris who played for the side in 2012-13.
No!
Catalin.
Yes. Catalin Krish.
Yes.
Absolutely.
There you go, mate. Yes. So there very talented. Yes.
Yeah, but you didn't sign Stefan
Ivan. Big family.
Once again, thank you very much to our sponsor, Phil Shelley, for supplying that. And thanks again for your ongoing support over easily these last 9-10 years. Thank you, Phil.
Okay, let's move on.
Sorry, can I just say before, we're going to carry on for another sort of 10, 15 minutes and then we're going to open the floor up to you lot. So if you've got a sensible question that we can actually put on air, then, you know, we'll put them open to Andy and Chris.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a man that Mark Lawrenson describes as Miami Mike. You know who that is?
Mike Bamba.
Yeah. Mm. Why is he called Miami? Everyone used to call him Miami, apparently.
I never heard that, Miami Mike. He had a guy in San Diego down there. Bob Bell was a big mate of his.
That's the other end of the country.
Yeah. No. But I tell you, I never heard of Miami Mike, have you?
I don't know where it come from. But I guess, you know, Mike...
Mark Lawrenson.
Mike. Mike was flamboyant, I guess, in a way. I was talking to somebody in the bar there, obviously, you know, going back a little bit when I was at Norwich.
There's a change.
Exactly. I mean, all the directors and the chairman there were old school. You never could sort of get close to them. They were always in the boardroom and stuff like that. When I came to Brighton, Mike Bamba was so hands-on, you know. He was great. I remember him, you know, talking to me the day I signed. If you've got any problems, son, he said, come and see me. He had his office under the stands. And he was also one of those chairmen that before the game, he'd come in and wish everybody the best of luck before the game, which never had that at Norwich, as I say, because that was old school. So for me, you know, Mike was a larger-than-life character. You know, terrific guy. Very innovative in what he did for the club as well. Not just, obviously, running the club, but the things he did, you know, the Seagull special. You know, we had that. I don't think any other club was doing that in the Football League at that time. Went on to do British Caledonian, et cetera, et cetera. So, top guy for me. Loved him as a chairman and,
It's a shame we don't do the Seagull special anymore, isn't it? I mean, we have a rail system that doesn't work, but it'd be lovely to have that going again, wouldn't it?
But, I mean, it'd be fair to say that Bamba put the Albion on the map, really. I mean, the signing of Brian Clough for one big thing, that everyone's like, sat and took notice. Well, who is this Brighton? Why is Clough going there?
Mike Bamba definitely put this football club on the map, but there's a couple of gentlemen in here this evening, more than a couple, but two in particular, Paul Sambra and Dick Knight, who really kept the club after the altercations the club had. Them two. And a band of 200 others, but them two in particular were outstanding. Proper people who stood up in times of... it was pouring down with rain, wind, snow, everything, and everything was going wrong, and these two stood up to everything that was thrown at them and made the club survive. And I can't... My admiration, I was watching from a distance, I was no longer involved. Absolutely magnificent what they did. Absolutely magnificent. Well done, Dick Knight, and well done, Paul Sambra. Mm. Brilliant.
I mean, apart from the playoffs in 91, I mean, we're on a downward trajectory, and in 97, we're obviously staring down into the abyss there. So, I mean, and what Dick did to save the club...
Can I also throw a tiller into that as well? Because, I mean, what we've got here is we've got such a diverse fan base. I mean, John was talking about it in the bar early. We've got, I mean, here's your classic example. Hard left socialist punk poet. City accountant. Somewhere in between is an advertising guru. That and sort of several others have actually sort of got together for the sake of football, for the sake of community, for the sake of the city, for the sake of just all is good in society. Mm. So when you mention Dick and Paul, absolutely. Mm. I want to throw in John into that argument. I want to throw in Tim Carter, Liz Costa. Mm. I want to throw in Sarah Watts and Paul Welsh and a whole load of other people and Ed Bassford and a whole load of other people who, were it not for them... And everyone else, we would not be having this, you know, we wouldn't have a football club. We wouldn't be able to have the Albion Roar, which we thank you for all coming along. But we wouldn't be in the Premier League now. We wouldn't be the club that we are. And at the moment, it's just brilliant to be a Brighton fan.
Yes, well spoke.
To be fair, it always has been, but you know.
Well, I mean, 38 years since you two achieved it, we did make it up to the Premier League and dining at the first at the top table once more. So what do you make of the Albion now?
Well, I mean, for me, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, obviously, you know, getting that promotion in the first place just brought back so many memories, as you say, of our time, you know, doing it back in the 70s. And look, you know, this club, as we just said, has been on the most incredible journey, you know, from being a top flight club back in the 70s to almost going out of existence. And we all know the hurt and the pain that it was causing every one of us. And as you just all said, you know, the guys, you know, and that includes everybody, have got behind this club and brought it to where it is today, you know. And for me, that is just absolutely fantastic. So to be in the Premiership, you know, last year, get a promotion to the Premiership, I just think it's just meant so much to all of us, you know. And obviously staying up now and consolidating is obviously what it's all about, you know. The journey... it's been incredible. You know, we are playing in a fantastic stadium, but all I've ever said all along is, you know, you guys, who obviously have been with the club all the way, fully deserve everything that you've got because you've gone through so much. You know, as you said, I've been like Kat on the outside looking in. You know, obviously my heart's been with the club all the time, but not been involved with it because obviously you know you don't. I am now, thankfully. I've got doing a bit of hosting there at the lounge, so I'm back in a football environment and I love it. You know, but. For the club to be where it is today, I think, you know, guys, it's just amazing. And we're all so proud of what we've achieved, you know, on this journey and to be where we are today.
Now, Kat, looking around the dugouts of the world, there's a lot of people who are actually older than you. Do you fancy another go?
I'm sorry? Didn't repeat that. I was falling asleep then.
He was having his snooze.
I was saying that there's a lot of older managers around in the dugouts around the world, and you could probably have another go.
No. That was the one and only time. I was messing around with directors and what went on when I left the club. No, not for me. But getting back to what Andy was saying, it is a superb time. It's almost a reflection of Coventry City Football Club, actually, because they went up exactly as Brighton's gone up. And then we got in Europe and played all these wonderful teams. And then people got fed up it after a while. They want so forth. And we all were expanded like Brighton did going back them years. And you've got to control it. Fortunately, we've got a chairman who's mega, mega rich. And it makes such a bloody difference to the thing. I just think this consolidation thing is all right. But I think we're a bit better than that. But, you know, I think the triangle, like I said, with Larry Lloyd, Kenny Burns and Peter Shilton, we've got with this Duncan Duffy and this Australian goalkeeper.
Mate, right.
It's very, very solid there. I wasn't sure about the Bong fella. I don't know what's going on there, but this thing, you know, this, that and the other. But we've got the basis of a good team. I like the left winger from Eastbourne. He's got a good left foot in and out. You know, he's not bad.
It does sound weird when you say the left winger from Eastbourne, doesn't it?
I don't know these characters. And then we've got Murray punching above his weight at a minute. But there was a time, and I said, Callum Wilson should have been here and young Madison should have been here as well. You know, I won't go into that because it upsets me. But they are better than they are. They're better than the Burnleys. They're better than Fulhams. They're better than all this lot. We could get on the periphery if it's done right, and Chris does it right. I'm sure he will. He's a good manager. Getting on the periphery of Europe this season in top 10. We've got to start thinking, I disagree with Andy. Consolidation. We consolidated last season. I think we're better than that. We've got some players. We've got some very, very good players. And I think we can go on and, you know, with 3 points for a win, we can get up there and be on the edge of things. I mean, look what this Howe's done at Bournemouth. And what has he got there? I watched him play the other day, other than Callum Wilson was out. But they're nothing special. But because they believe in themselves, I mean, you know, you've got to have this belief to go forward and create things and create chances and think we're going to get. And I just think sometimes Brighton, watching them, they play...
Within themselves?
Not with themselves. Because Murray's no legs, and he's a very intelligent player, but no legs, the back four never get out. That Blanier with science today, the back four don't get out. The midfield don't get out because they've nobody to run beyond their fullback. They've nobody to dink it over and somebody with pace to get beyond them.
So you would play Andoni then?
No. So we got Murray. So as it's knocked it to Murray with good balls from Gross, whoever it is, up to his chest and he gets it down. But still, Duncan Duffy is taking time to come out. They need... They need somebody to stretch some. They need pace in that team. They lack pace up the front.
So but that's what I'm saying, Kat. You know, at the end of the day, you've got to consolidate to build. You know.
Yeah, but I think they've got some good players, Andy.
I've no doubt. And obviously this season, I think they've strengthened that squad tremendously. And you're talking about a player that can stretch it. And we've just seen Andoni in the last two or three games. Mm. He's a player who can
do that. Well, there you go.
He's a player who can do
that. I don't
know
about that. You know, but that's what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, yeah. I think it is, for me, you know, just the way I see it, you know, you can't just push yourself in and say we're going to go. You've got to build slowly.
No.
You've got to build them foundations. You've got to. You literally have got to, obviously, like, get the right players on board. And every season that we can stay up allows us to accumulate the money to improve that squad. And I think that's the way it's got to go, Chris. You know what I mean?
I think the players we've got are better than just staying up, Andy.
No, I'm with you. I mean, look, at the end of the day, those players, it's like me and you. It's like me and you, manager saying, right, guys, we've got to finish fourth from bottom. Mm. No, you ain't for the top, Kat.
Okay,
when you go out, you want to win every game.
So, Kat, do you think we're playing the right formation then?
No. Chris Hughton's a very experienced manager. You know, everybody in a football ground has their opinions. Yes, do I think they sit back too much? Yes, I do. I do, because we've only got Murray at Adorna. I haven't seen this Adorna play. We need people to stretch their back four and let our back four get out and midfield get out. So there, you're 10, 15 yards further up the pitch around their box. And when the crosses come in, we need more people in the box. Okay. If you don't... Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what I'm saying.
Why didn't you listen?
Because, basically, Chris, I mean, back in 1986, you said this. Okay, my policy is to go at the opposition right from the start, explained Kaplan. I don't care whether we're home or away, our tactics are the same. The important thing is for us all is that the game is made entertaining.
Yes.
We have to put the game before individual club ambitions. Football has many problems. One of the reasons that it has not been marketed in the right way, we've got to make people want to come to the ground to see a good game. There's too much talk about sponsors, as far as I'm concerned. The only sponsors I want to see are the fans pouring in through our turnstiles. That's what the professional game is all about.
One of the greatest managers that ever been was Jock Steen, the Celtic manager. And the last thing he said to his players every time before he went out, he says, boys, go out and entertain and then win, hopefully. But the last thing he said, go out and entertain. And I think that people, you lot go out in the week, whatever you've done, you've got mortgage, kids' problems, missus' problems, this problem, that problem. And when you go to the football on a Saturday, you want to get away from them problems and be entertained. And I think...
For those that didn't hear that, he said, she comes with me.
No, you want to get away from it and enjoy and be entertained. You do, don't you?
Yes,
you do. You don't want to, you know, if it's dull there and it's dull when you get back home with the missus or whatever, you're getting no respite, are you? Do you know what respite means?
Yes.
Well,
yes. Right.
Yeah. Right. Your turn. So if anyone has a question, stick your hand up. What I'm going to do is I'm going to come around with a microphone. Just state what your name is and who your question's to and what your question is. So
I think it's right we start with Paul Tamra.
I think we will.
It's not really a question. First of all, I want to say thank you to Chris and Andy, especially for those kind words. But what got me involved is people like you. It's you, when I was a teenager, going to the Goldstone and seeing the passion with which you displayed playing football for our local team. That's what got me inspired and involved. And that's my gratitude for that and for players like you of that generation. I don't think we'll see those again in the same way we discussed earlier about the foreign players and having a reunion of the Premiership team that got us promotion from the Championship. They're all far and wide and that won't happen. But it's players like you, Chris, in particular, when I interviewed you for Goldseye all those years ago, in the basement of the rock shop and the parade there years ago, was inspiring for me and you, Andy, as well, and all the local players, Steve Piper, obviously, and Sully, and all of those. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Paul.
This is the biggest workout I've had in weeks.
Right, Stuart Ashby. I'd like to rewind. You mentioned that word a little earlier. When you were talking about a game in a promotion season against Blackburn, What came to my mind, and I thought you were even going to mention it, was that the same game where we had the smoke bomb goal?
Yes, yeah.
We thought that maybe they might deduct points and we wouldn't get promotion?
Yeah, quite surreal, isn't it? Again, I think that might be on YouTube, but as you say, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden somebody got through into the goal mouth. Was it Teddy Maybank? Had scored, yeah. Obviously, the goalkeeper was probably completely unsighted with all the smoke that was going on, and somehow the referee basically said, it's a goal, off we go. So quite surreal, as you say, and obviously, you know, first and foremost, you wouldn't get the flair into the stadium today, I'm sure, but to see... But to see that actually take place and the referee just said, yeah, no problem, that's a goal, off you go. That is, yeah. I think you know, obviously the victory was first and foremost in our mind. We were celebrating that, you know, and the fact I'd scored a goal as well, which was just, you know, unheard of. So I mean, I was doubly celebrating. So I don't know. I mean, maybe somewhere in the back of your head, maybe it was mentioned, but I can just remember we had our usual celebration and we had a big, big square bath in the Goldstone in the dressing rooms and we had a few showers alongside. It was basically all in the bath, all singing. What was the song, Kat? We are sailing.
Rod Stewart, yeah.
We are sailing, Rod Stewart. Yeah, and we used to sing that every time we got a victory, so... That's all I can really remember
Number
about
one,
that. 15th
of September, 1976.
Oh, there you go, guys. Yeah, yeah. I think ours was a better version, though, eh? To be honest, yeah.
75, yeah. Actually, sorry.
Yeah, okay, that's all right, mate. But no, I know exactly where you're coming from, and to this day it still astounds me that nothing was... They didn't stop the game or whatever. It just literally was allowed. But thank God it did. That gave us the points to go on and get, obviously, the result at Newcastle. So,
game.
Absolutely fantastic, yeah.
Hi, it's Phil here from the oldfootballshirts.com. The favourite kit you ever wore to play a football game in, both of you, Chris, Andy?
Go on, Kat, you go first. I'll just vote.
No, it wasn't green, no. It was green, actually. But Coventry's away strip when I was there was green and black Inter Milan colours and black. And I just felt when we stripped out of that and you look around the dressing room, we'd look absolutely great, even though... You know, where it was limited, we thought we got a chance here. It does make a difference. There's no question what strip you were. I'll tell you, we feel good. I don't know what it is, but I think it makes a difference. If you come out like a wet bloody Tuesday, do you know, you're 1-0 down right away. You've got to come out as though, you know, so, come on, we're here. It's Brighton, this.
So when you're Albion boss, did you choose the kits?
No, I didn't, but I think the kits were all right when I was there. Was the away strip when I was there? Can you remember?
It was the red version.
Yeah, not too bad. Red's a bit vicious, isn't it? Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. That's acceptable. But some of them now, oh, no. Yeah,
Phil, I thought that the red Phil. Kit was the third kit. Sorry, just quickly. I thought the red kit was the third one. We had a white kit, didn't we, as a second?
There was
a
white version of it, yeah.
Sorry, Rollo, carry on.
No, that's all right. No, for me, it was blue and white checks because it was the first time I'd ever played for my school under 11. So I put that shirt on and I wore it all day around school. So that was probably the one that stands out in my mind. Yeah.
Is that kind of, when you say checks, that's kind of a smaller version of blue and white quarters, which would have been Bristol Rovers, yeah?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah. And I used to support Bristol City, so it probably didn't go down well, but I just kept it on all day.
Okay, El Presidente.
I'd just like to add what Paul said to Chris and Andy. Brilliantly entertaining, and you're both very funny as well as being great footballers. Just to add one other name, Chris, to now, I'm talking about today. I think we've got a really good attacking midfield player in Yves Bissouma who has got real potential to be a terrific player for us as long as he's allowed to play further forward. That's what I've got to say. Because I also like the left back, Bernardo. Mm. I think he's going to be a player as well. Mm. But, you know, Chris Hughton has done a fantastic job and he was never going to make three or four changes immediately. He's gradually integrating them in the team, and overall the quality is going up. And I think in particular Bissouma, I know that Glenn Murray would like to play tighter with Bissouma, closer to him, but you know, I think that he is going to be a real player, Bissouma.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's absolutely great.
You've got an opinion on Bissouma, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm with you, Dick. I mean, I remember when he first played for the club, I think he got a man of the match as well, and I remember he doesn't speak much English, had a little bit of French, so it was like, you know, je m'appelle Andy when you interview him and stuff like that. But what a prospect, as you say, that, you know, I mean, from the moment that he stepped on that pitch, I think the first thing he did was he got the ball and he intercepted the ball and he went about 25 yards and got away from two of their midfield players and you just thought, wow, this fella has got something. And the fact he's so young, as you say, still learning about playing it top, top level, I think he's got an incredible future in front of him, Dick. Absolutely spot on.
And Chris has given him time to settle.
Yeah, well, you know, as Dick said, it's all about man management, isn't it? You know, at the end of the day, we've all got our opinions when you go to a match and, or before the game, who you'd like to play, you know. And obviously, maybe at times, your opinion doesn't agree with what Chris sets out for you. But at the end of the day, you know, he's took us to where we are today. And as you say, in terms of managing these young players like Eve, you know, it's been fantastic. You know, obviously, things are different from back in the day, Kat. When we played, you literally, if you sort of like had an injury, you had to get back as quick as you could. And that's what you did, you know. And because we had squads of 14, 15 players, now obviously the squads are a lot bigger. It gives them a little bit more time to manage injuries. And obviously, in Eve's case, that little bit of youth, you know, trying to learn, you don't want to throw him in too because it can obviously knock you back. So for me, as you say, Dick, top, top prospect. Chris is just doing a fantastic job in that aspect. You know, the other player I love watching as well is this Andoni. I just think that guy, again, you know, as Kat said, you know, Glenn, he's been incredible. I mean, the amount of goals he scored, the way he holds that ball up for us, he's been invaluable. You know, he is obviously 35 years of age now, as Bruno is 38. So it just shows you that obviously, you know, you can play at top level if you look after yourself, and those guys do, and they've got to make a lot of sacrifices. But, you know, for me, up until now, it's, my God, if Glenn doesn't play, what are we going to do? I feel we've got somebody now who can step in and score some goals for us. So
great news. That's
yeah,
good. That's
yeah, absolutely.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Any other questions on the floor? Okay, question in the corner here.
Hi, my name's Steve. Question for both Chris and Andy. Currently, you can see Optostats, everything's videoed. What sort of tactical information will you be able to be provided with in your day to help you deal with the opposition as players? And then for Chris's point of view, what were you able to provide for the players when you were the manager?
I think from my perspective, I concentrate on my own team. I thought if we played well in any game, in any situation, I thought my team was good enough to beat the opposition. I never felt that I'd go out. Even when we played Liverpool in the Cup and they're that wonderful team, I thought we'll win this game. I watched Liverpool on a Tuesday night at Liverpool playing Sheffield Wednesday. And I set Neil Smalley on one side and Stephen Penny the other and attacked him with Jerry Ryan and Connor. And I never thought. Today it's a little bit different. If they've got exceptional players, you've got to devise a system. I like this system. Like if your centre halves are not learning the game for whatever reason, not good. I like the one of Paul Clark who sits in front and dictates and protects your back four. Other than that, I like people to express themselves, get wide, get crosses in the box, and worry. Let them worry about us. But I don't like to sit back and invite trouble. I like to move the back four, get them up the field, get your midfield players up the field. But answers your question, I'm not too worried about the opposition unless they're exceptional. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back in the days, you say, we didn't have, obviously, you know, the facilities they have now to obviously, you know, monitor games, play games back, do the stats, etc. I mean, all we ever got was obviously a team talk from the manager, you know, on the day. Obviously, you knew about certain individuals that you were playing against. I mean, for instance, when we played that last game at Newcastle, we went up on the Tuesday before, I think it was, Kat, and they were actually playing Bristol Rovers at home on the Wednesday before we played them on the Saturday. And they had obviously some great players in their team. Peter Withe was a centre forward, and I think Withe scored two goals. I think they won 4-0, might have been 3, I'm not sure. So you know, didn't have to. I knew that. I knew how good he was, you know. So obviously going and seeing him perform, it was like, oh, this fella's a bit of a handful. So it wasn't so much about having everything available for you. It was just literally about focusing on what you had to do, you know.
We thought we was good enough to win all the games, didn't we, Roland?
Absolutely, Kat.
There was never any doubt that we was going to win. We didn't always win, obviously, but we thought we was going to win every game. We wasn't worried. We thought we was better than them. And the atmosphere and the togetherness of the team which they've got now as well, haven't they?
Absolutely,
it's the same
yeah.
today, you know. Yeah. It's wonderful to see.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, you go back to what we were talking about in the first half about the Southampton game where it was 0-0 and we didn't go up, and Mullery obviously got in the stands and said, we're going to go up next year. You know, what I will say, you know, when you look at a situation like that, it takes a lot of character for a team to pull themselves up after just missing out and then go up the following season. I know the guys did it here at the Amex, didn't they? You know, so we, like Chris said, we knew we had an incredible team spirit. We knew we had some good players in that team. But, you know, to coin a phrase, we knew to win any game, we had to be at our best. But the confidence was there. We all had great belief, as Kat said, that we were good enough to do it. And thankfully, it turned out in the end we did it.
There was an awful lot of parallels between the near miss we had before we got promoted and the near miss you had with the Spurs stitch up. So I mean, it's incredible how history repeats itself. Now, Al.
Anyone else has got a question for Rollo Kat?
Down the front here.
Down the front, okay.
Hi, my name's Glenn. Question for Chris. When you left the club, I, amongst a few thousand others, were moved to March to try and get you back. I'm not sure at the time. I think we thought you were sacked. I can't remember whether you were sacked or you left. But I just wonder what your thoughts on that. Because in my mind, you were the best, most entertaining manager we've ever had who's not been allowed to go on and have some success, you know? I think if you'd have been there
You're
longer,
not the only person who thinks that, trust me.
I know. The football you played was so entertaining. You know, it's you get that in patches now and then, but almost every week it was so entertaining. It was brilliant.
It's very nice you just said that. But football managers come and go, but the football club remains. The supporters are the key. The most important people at any football club are the supporters. Without the supporters, we have no club. Managers come and go. You do the best in the circumstances you're given. Unfortunately, it was a difficult time for the club when I was managing the club, but I do believe in playing football in a certain way. But it was very sad to see him go sideways and backwards after I left and things didn't improve. But it's so wonderful today to see, through the efforts, which were well documented, of people in this room and other people, to come back as strong as we are and playing like we are. You know, you go abroad. I was away last year and Graeme Souness got a break and I bumped into Graeme Souness and he was saying, other, you know, top people in football like Graeme was saying, what a transformation, Brighton. You know, everybody's talking about Brighton. It's great. It's absolutely magnificent. You know, so I can't believe what we've done, actually. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You know, I watch it on the television, don't go to many games, but watch it on the television. I'm absolutely thrilled how well they're doing. Thrilled.
Can I give an example as to Chris's time in management when he was a manager at Brighton? There's a couple of things I want to remember here, the personal things. There was one game one time when the pitch was covered in snow and the club put out an APB to everyone. Said, you know, can you... there's no way it would happen now. Can you bring your shovels with you because we want to help you clear the snow off the pitch. That's the one. And I think it was all orchestrated by Frankie Howard, who was the groundsman at the time. But the great thing about it was Kat, very busy, manager of Brighton and Hove Albion, made tea for everyone who...
Isn't that Rollo's job?
Is it what?
I told you, Kat, I told you I should have been your number two. Yeah. You know what I mean? Okay,
could have given us a stick of rock.
Foil, I tell you, mate.
But also, Kat, didn't you... You actually fined yourself a week's wages for a poor performance.
That's true. Against Barnsley, it was rubbish. Bloody rubbish.
You can remember it,
I think
it was
my job as a manager of a football club. Like I say, Jock Steen says we're here to entertain people. Barnsley aren't the biggest attraction, but we was awful. We was worse than worser. Is that the word? Worser.
Yeah.
Worser.
That's your new word for the dower.
Shocking. We were shocking. And I thought, if I can't produce a team to go out there and entertain our fans better than that, I don't deserve anything. So I said to Ken Calvert, don't pay me this week.
Hang on. There's another question from the front.
It's quite a somber question. I mean, it is quite a somber question. You talked about having Justin Fashion who come to stay with you, and your experience with him. Did you have any inkling of the turmoil that was going on inside him? And because obviously we all know what happened and what a sad story it ended up. Did you have any inkling at the time what was going on with him?
No, he's he's a very intelligent boy. He could talk about everything. And all I was interested in him, his ambition to do a job at Brighton, you know, with Terry Connor and Dean Saunders. I thought we'd got enough with Danny Wilson, hoping to get Ray Houghton, but I didn't get that. We had enough then to score enough goals to get promotion. He was the key to it, because we had wingers getting down there, whoever it was, Penny, or I can't remember who it was, Sully or God, I don't know, pretty Sully, getting crosses in the box. And what he needed is somebody to get on the head of, on the end of them. We've had Fred Binney in the past, we've had Sammy Morgan, we've had players, and I like players like that. I like people who put people around, put themselves around. When I knew I was interested in Fashanu, the best centre-half other than this bugger here in the league, right. This yeah. lad here, was Mick McCarthy. And he was at Manchester City, playing centre-half for Manchester City. So I went up, I got my car out, went up there to watch him play in Manchester City. And Fashanu absolutely terrorised McCarthy. Terrorised him. I've never seen Mick McCarthy, an hard Barnsley lad, absolutely smash people. He Fashanu, and I thought, he's still got some, the fire's still burning. Anyhow, when he come down here, like I said, I did as much homework as possible, and that's the reason I had him in my own home personally, not in an hotel, to do as much homework as I could to make sure that the 100,000 this club spent, which is a hell of a lot of money, wasn't wasted. As it transpired, it didn't work out. But when I look back, I thought, what a mistake, Cap. But when I look back at Sir Alex Ferguson, all the people, they all made mistakes as well. You know, it just didn't work out. But I was a bit worried for Fashanu because his mind was all over the place. That's, I think that's what you're engaging on. His mind, he was all over the bloody place. He'd had a difficult upbringing. And when he left us, he went all over the... Oh, God knows where he went. And I was concerned for his well-being, yes, but... very difficult. Just a very, very disappointing issue, that. Probably the biggest disappointment in my career in management, yeah. No, very, very sad.
All right.
We're getting to the end of the evening now. I think some people are having to leave. Thankfully, we've actually sort of like overrun here because I think, you know, Chris and Andy are so entertaining. And so thank you guys for coming along. And I just want to finish with one last question. I've asked it before of other people on stage and on radio, and I think you've largely answered it, but I just want to hear it, is, you know, in your association off and on with Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club over the past 40, 45 years, both professionally and personally, Chris, Andy, what does Brighton and Hove Albion mean to you?
Chris.
What does it mean to me? It means some of the happiest times in my life. Both playing for this club, coming down from Coventry and playing for the club in their promotion years, it means me meeting some marvellous characters, absolutely superb teammates, which I miss to this day. It means being tremendous pride in becoming manager of Brighton of Albion Football Club, and just generally watching them go from strength to strength now gives me great pleasure.
Really?
Yeah, what is that?
Rollo.
Look, football, you know, for me, has been, you know, the most incredible journey, as I've said before. You know, I started playing at school. I was 13 playing rugby, never played football, just kicked the ball around in the playground, managed... Yeah, I know. Sorry, yeah.
Oh,
it's all right, mate.
Sorry, yeah.
And then suddenly got a chance to play for a friend's dad's team in the next village at 14/15, and that's where it all started. So football for me has just been incredible. You know, I had three to four really wonderful years at Norwich, but the highlight of my career, it was coming to Brighton, you know. Obviously, you know, with the Cluffy signing, that was all very, very special, but obviously it didn't. But for the moment I came to this club, you guys have been such an important part of my love for this town, this city, I should say, and this football club, you know. And as Kat said earlier on, you know, without you guys, there would be no Brighton of Albion. There would be no football. And look, you know, I've loved every minute of what I do. As you say, I've had incredible friends in this dressing room. Kat's one of them, you know. We've got so many there. You've met so many great people along the way. But for me, you know, playing in front of you guys at the Goldstone was the most special, special thing in my life, honestly. And I thank you all for supporting this club, as you have done, and everything that obviously you've put behind. And, you know, all I can say is, guys, Let's just keep it going because this club has got a long way to go. We're just going to get better and better and we are going to rise up that Premiership. And I just want to be around to see them qualify for Europe. There you go, guys.
Well, I think that these guys, they've got so many memories of this place, but they've also given us so many memories. And we'd like to thank them for sharing us with us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Catlin and Andy Rollins.